Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to speak with playwright, author, and a very talented actor, Chris Lemon. He has a one-man show that's all about his relationship with his father, and now he's going to teach a course about the Golden Age of Hollywood that is based on the book. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sherry. Again, here we go, again for the first time.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate you coming back, Chris.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You're lovely.
Thank you. You are a very talented actor. I would love to see the one-man show. From the bits that I've seen in pictures and stuff like that, it looks like it's an amazing show. And now you're going to teach. How cool is that?
It's really kind of amazing and humbling. Because these kids are so darn smart, I hope I do a good job. you can't pull the wool over their eyes. It's wonderful. I mean, to see how many evolutions this idea that came straight from my heart, this show I'm shooting from the hip and it's gone through so many different, first it was a book and then it was this sort of, I guess, what would you call it? Like, performance piece. And then, I made the decision to do it in Pop's voice and Pop being Jack Lemmon, for those of you out there who, like my students, don't even know who the hell Jack Lemmon is, see the show and you will. It's amazing because I didn't, I just finished two performances the last 3 days. It's been a wild ride. Went down to University of New Haven where I'm teaching this next semester. Professor Lemmon, can you believe that?
What would your dad think of that? What would your dad think about that? That you're Professor Lemmon. What would he say?
He was Professor Fate. So now we're on the same playing field. I just chuckle every time I say it to myself. Yes, Professor Lemon in campus. But I went down and did the show on Thursday night, then flew out to Hannibal, Missouri. Now, who out there can tell me what incredibly famous celebrity / author was born in Hannibal, Missouri? He later went on to live in my hometown, where I live now, of Hartford, Connecticut. Nobody knows. Mark Twain.
Oh, Mark Twain. That's right. Hannibal.
How do you like them
apples?
That's right. He's from Hannibal, Missouri. So I went and played, and I ended up playing a university there, too. And so I had two shows in a row run by kids who didn't know. I asked them, do you know who Jack Lemmon is? Do you know who Walter Matthau is? No. Do you know who Marilyn Monroe is? Yeah.
of course.
At least, that one they got. At the end, they said, we didn't know who, and all of them say this, and it just so turns me on. We didn't know who Jack Lemmon was, but as soon as you started, we got what he was all about. And by the end of the thing, we did know who he and all of these other people, Jimmy Cagney, Gregory Peck, we did know who they were, and we want to go watch more of their films.
Good.
And I think that's just such an exciting thing. And I think that's what I wanted, that kind of excitement about what that era was, is one of the things I want to bring to this classroom. I've given it a lot of thought. It is a big responsibility, and I do not take it lightly. Obviously, I'm going to need to teach practical curriculum to these students, the ability, which I think is going to really boil down to the writing. I think it's all about the writing to begin with anyway. you know, how to write a proper feature film script with proper formatting. Same thing for television. Same thing for a memoir. I'm not going to pretend to be more than a memoir writer. I would certainly not try to teach them structure of a novel. But also all the effect that music has on this, because there is so much music involved in the show. But really, basically, this is the school of communications. And in order to mm-hmm. communicate, isn't that some form of acting? I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
So I really want to teach them that, too, and which will allow them to better communicate in the world and in their field of endeavor. So I'm going to make them get up on their feet. What the heck? I think it'd be kind of fun. It'll be a little scary at first, but it might also give them a good confidence factor. I know comedy improv always did that for me. On top of that, I really want there to be that spirited debate between my colleagues / students and I about that era of innocence that wasn't all that innocent. The era that this show talks about, the golden age of Hollywood. I think that's got the stuff of maybe, you know, being a reason for these kids to show up and come to this class. So I'm very excited. Tomorrow's my first day.
Whoa. First
yeah,
day.
Yeah.
I hope you get an apple.
I don't know. You know, I don't think they do that anymore, but I'm going to remind them. You know, I think now it's like it's turned into like a kumquat, hasn't it? It has to be like, you know. It has to be a proper fruit these days. It can't be an apple. It's, you know, it's like a turnip. I don't know. Go ahead.
You got to explain to people who don't know who Professor Fate is. I know Great Race and all that. But you have to explain who Professor Fate is and why you were talking about him and what Jack did in that movie.
Jack played two roles in that movie. He didn't just play Professor Fate. He played the Prince of Potsdorf as well. Oh, you are.
I love
Leslie Armstrong. One of the fellas, before the show the other night at the university, they had all of the board of directors and all of this and all of that and the other thing come down to the show, and I went and met with them beforehand. Talk about getting a little bit nervous. One of the classes is actually going to be about that, dealing with nerves and what it means for performance. I digress. One of the fellows came to me and said, my favorite Jack Lemmon movie, and don't hit me for saying this, he's an older guy, he was sweet as hell, is The Great Race. And I said, it's my favorite too. I can't say that when people ask me, you know, I mean, I have to be responsible about being the preeminent authority on Jack Lemmon and that era of films and the films that he did. And of course, the most important one he did for so many reasons was The Apartment,
mm-hmm.
the one where he was able to, yeah, that's where he broke through and showed people, hey guys, I'm not just some guy who can fall down and make you laugh. Even though he did it in Roberts too, if you take a look at
that turn of character in Mr. Roberts where he finds out that he's dead and he just, you can see the transformation on his face. That was amazing. He deserved the Oscar.
It's a skin crawling moment, you know, and whether it was, I don't know if Josh Logan or John Ford were on board as director at that point, but it was directed brilliantly. You know, there was all sorts of stuff going on with the directors and the producers on that show. You know the story behind him getting Roberts, don't you?
Yeah.
I told that on the air, didn't I? Yeah, I told it before, so I'm not going to repeat it.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell it again.
It's a great story.
If you want. I mean,
okay.
There's
right.
new people listening to the show.
I've already completely forgotten about what the hell you asked me to do. So remember for me, because I'm 11. When we talk, you know, we do a half hour on Hello. And we go on like, you know, walkabout when we talk. And then I suddenly realize I haven't answered the question and I've forgotten what the question was about. And now I've forgotten why I forgot about it. When he wanted Roberts bad, and he wanted it from the second it was a Broadway play. And he just never got past the door. To read for the part on Broadway. So when he was doing his TV series on the Columbia lot, one day he was looking for a chance to read for anyone, anywhere. and you know, as Jack says, and one day I go wander onto the sound set, you know, where I hear John Ford, the greatest director in the world, is shooting a long gray line. He was set to direct Roberts. I'd never met the guy, and I knew if I could get 2 seconds with him, he'd take one look at me and whammo, I am. So there I am. There I am on the set, and grips are pushing things this way and that way. And this one old grip, oh, boy, it looked like he hadn't done a load of laundry in 27 years, slovenly as well, comes walking up to me. Say, you're that Jack Lemmon kid, aren't you? I've been watching you. Yeah, I hear they're making Roberts into a film. You'd be a good choice for the part of Ensign Palmer. I told the old guy to spread the word. Jack, I didn't recognize him. I figured maybe he worked on the Judy Holliday film. Then he looks at me and he says, spit in your hand. I look at this draggled nut like he's lost his mind. What? Well, it's an old Irish custom. You're Irish, aren't you? Spit in your hand. So I figure, what the heck? Tui, I spit in my hand. Tui, he spits in his hand, shakes my hand and says, congratulations. I'm Ford, and you're Pulver. See you on the set. It's a great story, huh?
I love it. I love you did your dad, and you did Ford, too.
Yeah, Ford. What a piece of work Ford was.
Oh, I've heard stories, especially from Robert Wagner. Oh, woo.
Oh, Bob. Don't tell him I called him Bob. I was with RJ one day on a course and a golf course. We were at a celeb thing, and some pro was trying, you know, was giving us stuff, and there was a bunch of celebs around, so he was trying to be kind of, you know, funny and on, and he called RJ Wagner Bob, and there was this long beat, and RJ just looks at him and says. He doesn't like being called Bob is the point of that story.
Actually, I would probably call him Mr. Wagner.
That works. Yeah, he's a great guy. Gosh, yeah. God bless RJ.
I read his autobiography, and I mean, he was like, he really talked about Ford. I had not heard those stories until I read that. So
yeah,
I was like, oh, my God.
Ford is a tough Irish kid, you know? I mean, this is, you know, you're talking the real deal. Ford punched Henry Fonda square in the nose. That's the reason he quit. That he left.
Oh, my
Mr.
God.
Roberts. Punched him square in the nose after the first day of shooting.
That's right, and it was years. They worked together for years, and that's why they never worked with each other again.
Josh Logan ended up taking the job. The guy, you know, who wrote it and directed it on Broadway, ended up taking over for Ford. So it's a half-half.
I didn't know. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, all sorts of interesting stuff went back then in that era of innocence that wasn't all that innocent. Which is,
I never thought it was innocent.
That's the whole point I was going to make, actually, earlier in that one thing I told you to remind me about, is the fact that there are all sorts of other things involved aside from, the curriculum of teaching, you know, and allowing these students to come away with practical stuff. I want it also to be a very spirited debate, and at the core are going to be some of the main themes of the play. And the first class was last Thursday night when they came to see the show. Thank God I didn't fall down and break my head or something. There's another way to say it in the business, but I'm not allowed to do it on your show. And it ended up being a really fun night. It really was an era of innocence in so many ways. I mean, one of the stories I tell in the show, I think I've told it on here, is the fact that I lived on Santa Monica Beach after my mother and father were divorced, which is also a part of the show, and the reasons why are also part of the show. But I was in a very early age, and she moved to Santa Monica Beach, which was a very magical place. I mean, it really was Frankie and Annette and Beach Blanket Bingo and all that stuff. And Marilyn lived three houses down from it. Peter Walford lived next door to her. And, occasionally the Prez, you know, Mr. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, would come buzzing over in his helicopter, landed on the beach,
go marching in, have a fine time with everybody. And one day he went for a little swim in Marilyn's pool. Marilyn happened to be in the pool with him. And I went spying on him, of course, got grabbed by the Secret Service and delivered back on my porch. But think about that. You know, think about that
wow.
time. We'd sit on the beach next to a bonfire while, you know, under a full moon as the Grunion ran. I don't even know if they
wow.
do it anymore in Santa Monica Bay. But, you know, and Marilyn would come down and we'd all have ukuleles and we'd be singing and just having fun. And I never saw her more comfortable than during those times. She wasn't on. She didn't have to perform. You know, she didn't have to live up to that impossible legacy, for lack of a better word, that she'd been handed. It really was an era of innocence in so many ways, though it was also the three martini lunch and smoking two packs of Winston's on camera. You know, while everybody was doing their job. I think that's one of the things we need to talk about. I mean, is, of course, we all lose our innocence as we matriculate into society. Graduate is probably a better word, into society. But is society losing its innocence at an ever-increasingly rapid pace as we enter into this era of communication? Well, the answer, of course, is it's obvious. But the reasons behind that answer are pretty interesting and complicated and worth having spirited debate about. So I don't want this class to just be that curriculum. And it's certainly never going to be a class where you just walk in and I give a lecture and then you get graded on something. I just don't run that way. This is going to be us having a bunch of fun, but at the same time, hopefully learning from each other. I hope to learn from them equally. And I think that'll be a turn on for these guys, especially because they're undergrads. And they've just got so much spunk and piss and vinegar and all that stuff going on. So there we go. That's what I'm hoping for tomorrow. Yay!
Tomorrow. Wow. How exciting is that?
Yeah.
I take the class, and I'm an old lady, and I take the class.
I've had a bunch of people say that. Unfortunately, it's got to be on Wednesday afternoons because I got to work, and, you know, and I work at night because I'm hitting the boards with the play.
Well, it's a little far for me, too.
Say it one more time. I'm sorry.
I said it's a little far away for me.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
You can stay in our
guest
house.
You know, I'm in California and you're in Connecticut. It's a little far.
Yeah, come stay in the guest house. We'll put you up.
My question was about Professor Fate. You were going to talk about who he was and about the Great Race.
That's right, I was. Actually, Professor Fate, a lot of the story is, here I go, I'm off the lemon walkabout. Warning. The major point of the story is about a father and son ripped apart and then who then choose to understand we're human and forgive each other's faults. Forgive is a very egotistical term, but it's the best I can use right now, and then come back together. So, yes, we were separated at a very early age, but that cathartic process started happening in time for the Great Race. And right around the age of 11 or 12, I think I would have been, Pop started seeing me again, and we started getting back together again, and he'd start bringing me to the set again, as he had early on. The Great Race was my greatest memory. And I'll tell you two great stories. I've probably already told them on the show, but that's okay. These are probably all new listeners. one of which was, if you remember, it was Tony Curtis. And mm-hmm. Tony Curtis and Ross Martin have a fabulous duel. It's a wonderful fence.
It's one of my favorite scenes.
Great Race, yes? Come on, I'm not going to put Sherry on the spot. I want the viewers to respond now. Who directed The Great Race, everybody? I can't hear you.
Blake Edwards. Blake
the
Edwards.
Great Blake Edwards, who also, you know, Victor Victoria, Pink Panther, on and on. Some of the great comedic works. And also directed my father in...
Blake Edwards directed...
Wine and Roses.
That's right. I forgot about
one
that.
One of the most dramatic pieces either of them ever did. It's incredible. And where they went with it, how they did it. It was almost like Edward R. Murrow, you know, my father's performance. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like very clinical and radio. It was really brilliant. And I do a big tip in the show. And you know, in watching that movie again, as I got the performance correct, oh, gosh, it was such a trip. Anyway, what the hell was I talking about? The Great Race.
The Great Race. And how it brought you back together and you were on the set.
Tony and Ross, that big dueling scene on the set, you know, which is just done so perfectly Hollywood. And Tony was in between takes when I showed up. And he taught me how to fence. I got taught how to fence on the set of The Great Race by Tony Curtis at the age of 11.
Oh, how cool is that?
And I'm a martial artist. That's my sport. It's been my sport all my life. I started when I was 5. So it was even cooler for that reason. So, yeah,
wow.
It was fabulous. But I'll tell you the best story of all. This is the story. It was on the Columbia backlot, which is a big place, and they needed golf carts to get around. So Blake, mm-hmm. being Blake, had all of the golf carts mocked up to look exactly like the cars
like the
they
cars.
Drove. And I swear to God. So my father's golf cart was the Fate Mobile. Natalie Wood's golf cart was the Stanley Steamer. Tony's was the great Leslie Mobile. Okay, for the listeners out there, only you can answer this. Sherry doesn't get to answer. What do you think Blake Edwards' golf cart was mocked up as? I can't hear you.
I don't know. I would think, because he did to
what
Laurel and Hardy, maybe, because he
no.
said to Mr. Laurel and Mr.
What's
Hardy.
What's his most famous comedy?
The Pink Panther.
So what do you think his golf cart was?
The Pink Panther.
Can you imagine that?
That would be really cool.
The Pink Panther wheeling its way through Columbia backlot in 1970, early 70s, mid-70s. When was Great Race? I think that's when it was, right around there. Yeah.
That is so cool.
No, late 60s, actually. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
because
so anyway,
it was in the mid, was
the story,
it the mid-60s
yeah.
or was the late 60s?
I think it's mid to late, yes, right? It would have to be
yeah.
in there because I was about 11. And that doesn't mean I'm 63 now. Excuse me, hello, what? Well, I am a professor, so I have to be over 60. But can you imagine, every day, here's the great, great ending to this story. Every day at lunch, the big backlot Columbia whistle would blow, and they'd all run, sprint to their golf courts, carts, and race to the commissary. So you'd have all the golf carts racing with each other. The Stanley Steamer, the Leslie Mobile, the Fate Mobile, with Peter Falk and my old man in it. You know, push the button, Max! And the Pink Panther, you know, racing each other, buggy bumping each other all the way to the commissary. So, gosh,
didn't Natalie win?
There's all sorts of stuff that goes on, and stuff changes. It always has, all the way through history. But that stuff, you know, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And that's the kind of magic I hope that the kids and I, and some of them are older too, my students, my colleagues. I'm going to call them colleagues. I don't want to call them students, because I want to learn from them too. My colleagues and I are going to be talking about that kind of stuff. You know, we'll
that
do some
so
hard
cool.
learning too. I mean, it is a university, and I've got to give them their money's worth, and I can teach them how to write a good script. And I can teach them other stuff too, how to act and that stuff. Because I'm good at that stuff, you know. But that's my old man talking just then, not me, I swear to God. But that's the kind of stuff I think is going to be really fun. And then what I really want them to do is what I did after the really good classes I used to take with David Alexander, who taught me drama and scene study and stuff like that after I graduated from CalArts. I graduated as a classical pianist. I wanted to be the next Liszt. Who the hell wants to follow in Jack Lemmon's footsteps? Not me. As it turns out, that's what I do. You know, it's what I'm good at.
Uh-huh.
So I said modestly. But and also Harvey Lembeck ran that incredible comedy workshop out there in L.A. at the Paramount Commissary. I think it's still there. I know Helene and is carrying on, you know, the torch, and Michael, his son, who's such a talented director of the Harvey Lembeck comedy workshop. I spent 11 years in that place. And what we used to do, we learned as much. We learned tons doing it. But then we'd all go over to the Gingerman in Beverly Hills, which was Carol O'Connor's bar. Carol O'Connor from, oh, God almighty, what's the series? Oh, my God, I'm going up.
All in the Family?
All in the Family. Had a great little bar in Beverly Hills. And we'd all go over there and have a beer and discuss what we'd done in the classroom. And I found that I learned as much there from my colleagues, you know, my fellow students, as I did in the classroom. And that's what I want my students to be able to do. And it's what I've done with the show as well. I don't want to hit any nails on the head. I don't want to answer any questions. I want you to ask those questions and see if you can find an answer yourself. And I think I've successfully, I've been told I have, done that with the narrative of the show. And I want that to be, it's something I'm going to strive towards as a teaching point with the class as well. I want these students, I'm going to give them a half hour at the end of each class to go, and I'm going to demand, and I'm going to go check up on them too. You know, I'm going to grab myself, I don't drink decaf, I'm sorry, but I'm going to go grab myself a cup of Joe and look out the corner of my eye and listen out of the corner of my ear and see if these guys are getting turned on by what I'm presenting. And if they are, then I'll have a smile and I can drive home with a smile on my face. If they're not, I'll fix it so that they are. Because I think that's what it's all about, Alfie. If you can get them thinking and get them talking and say, well, what do you think he meant by that? And, well, I think maybe he was wrong. I think we should be, but maybe he was wrong. Well, I don't know if I agree with that. That's, now we're talking. And I hope that's what learning's about. Gosh, I'm a professor now. So I just hope I can, more than anything, I want to teach them, but I want to turn them on too. I want to get them excited about this crazy business.
I always found it interesting. One of the things that always bugged me was when I would talk about a movie and they said, oh, that's black and white. I don't watch black and white. I'm like, you know, you're missing half the greatest movies ever made by just that statement.
Who said that?
People when I was at different jobs.
I want you to say their name on air so they can live in shame for the rest of existence.
But it was like it was there's lots of people. If you
one
long
of the shows
list.
Is actually all about technology and you know it's always going on, but how technology enormously influences and drives the business forward. And before every class, I show clips from different films. And one of those classes, I don't know if it's going to have all of them, but they'll contain films that aren't just Jack Lemmon films. We're talking Citizen Kane will be a very important film in this course, as will be Capra, Wonderful Life. But there's one film, even though I don't know if I have to do my homework yet. I've been so damn busy, I haven't gotten it exactly. I think it is the first time Technicolor was used was The Wizard of Oz. Am I wrong about that? Or was it Gone with the Wind?
No, I think it was. I think it was used earlier, but only for like musical numbers and like.
I'm talking Technicolor though.
Yeah, I know it was. It was Technicolor in like one of the early musicals, like in the mid 30s, but they only used it for the musical. The first time it was used fully, I think, was in Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, it's something like that. I'm going to look it up, obviously, before I teach it. But I think it's a really cool example of exactly what you're talking about. The fact that this was a game changer, that they started this brilliant film in black and white.
Black and white.
Sepia tone. We should say sepia tone, because it was sepia tone.
Mm-hmm.
And then transformed when she arrives in Oz. And it was like, can you imagine being in that theater at that moment?
Yeah.
And then what I'm going to do is try to chart the real game-breaking moments, one of which I believe, in my opinion, was James Cameron's film Avatar, which my brother, my godbrother, Ricky Carter, who is a two-time Academy Award winner, was the art director on. An enormously talented fella. And so it's going to give me great pleasure to take a look at the groundbreaking stuff that went on in that film. Whether you think it's a good film or not, or whether you like James Cameron or not, is indifferent. He made some really groundbreaking films, and there's so many others. So what I'm going to try to do is do a chart through this golden era of movie making, the 40s through, in my opinion, the 40s through the 80s, and show how technology impacted the industry, leading towards things that who'd have ever thought that video games would become what they've become. We've got to take a look at that. I mean, look at what's happened and how that market is now. You know, listen, I'm not a big what's the thing about stealing automobiles? What's it called? It's one of the big ones. Auto theft.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to talk.
Oh, Gone in 60 Seconds. I think was it Gone in 60 Seconds? I think.
I don't know. Yeah, that crap.
I'm not really
like
into those movies. Yeah.
No, nor am I. I don't have to.
Sorry, everybody who does like them.
Yeah, sorry, everybody who does, but it's not for me. And so it's, you know, Professor Chris has made a choice. He's made a congressional choice here, and those are right out. But I think some of these things that I've seen around, you know, they're really kind of epic. You know, they're very Games of Thrones-ish and really very cool. And so all of that was directly impacted by choices made, again, back in these great films, you know, from that incredible era of movie making when, you know, the whole industry was run by these megalomaniacs who were brilliant and who took chances, like Sam Goldwyn and Louis Mayer. This is something that we really need to speak about. And I'm going to be very excited to.
Do you remember when I was a little girl, the show Wizard of Oz at Thanksgiving on TV? And the first time, when I was a kid, they used to show Wizard of Oz every year at Thanksgiving.
Well, I think they still do.
Do they still?
I know we
watched.
Because
I thought one of the
networks
bought it. Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life they show every Christmas still.
Yeah.
But the first time I saw it, I think I was about 6 or 7 years old. I just remember this. I was sitting on my mom's lap, and when it was about to turn from black and white to color, she goes, "Sherry, watch this. It's special." And I never, ever forgot that moment of wonder when it went in color. That's because my mom kind of prompted me, but at the same time it was like, oh my God, because even though I grew up watching stuff in color and black and white, both at that time, they had a lot of black and white too. Maybe because she prompted me, but that moment when she walks out the door, she goes, "Watch her open the door." My mom.
Yeah, good.
And she, watch her open the door, and all of a sudden everything was in color. That moment of
your
wonder, I still have. Oh yeah, she was wonderful.
Well, God bless you, Sherry. I know you just lost your mom, and that's the most important thing, and it's really at the root of what my story is all about, is the fact that you have those memories. and that you will always have her with you because of that. And it's, I think it's the greatest gift that we're all given here on this crazy little blue marble, you know, that we spin around on, that we have that. And that's the whole thing. This whole journey for me started with writing down memories of what my father and I did together after I lost him. And when people come to me and say, I'm in such pain, I don't know what to do, I say, write them down, just write them down. And as you do, you'll remember more and more and more. So it's so heartening for me to hear you say that, that you remember sitting on your mom's lap and that she opened that door for you. That's what it's all about, Alfie.
Yep, my mom was the one for the classic movies, and my dad was the one for the books, my pile on the books. But my mom, we would come home from school, and there was a movie at 3:30 back then, and she goes, wait for your homework, come sit with me and watch this movie. I think that's why my brother and I like classic films, because you would come home from school, sit with her, watch it, and then go do our homework, and then
God
go out
bless
and play.
Her. See, that's wonderful. And, you know, I think it's really very important. One of the books that I'm going to put on loan out in the classroom is I got from when I was out there a few months back. Gina and I came out for the TCM red carpet at the Grauman's in Hollywood. And one of the books they gave us was 50 great movies of that era and why they're great. And so I want the kids to be able to grab them and grab that book. You can read it in a half hour and check it out, take it home and take a look, because they really were. I mean, listen, again, it's that era of innocence that wasn't all that innocent. And I have to be responsible enough to take a look back at its faults as, you know, as well as the positive things. This was a white run industry. It was run by white people, and there was not the kind of opportunity that anyone other than the white person could have. There were greats like Sidney Poitier and Robert, oh my God, I just want to put his name, from Showboat, the brilliant singer. Oh my God.
Oh.
Anyway, you know who I'm talking about, old man.
Yeah, but I blinked out on his name.
or Leslie Uggams, or on and on, you know. And I'm trying to think of an Asian American example, and also an American Indian chief, George.
And Cicely Tyson, she was just in the Emmys.
Right. I mean, there were these people, but it was still a predominantly white-run and white-dictated world, and that's wrong. I'm sorry, it's wrong. Yes, sure. Most of the white race, the only real ones here are the American Indians. We all came from, I mean, I'm Irish, German, French, and whatever the hell I am. my wife's Italian. That's the, Jesus, watch out for those. No, I'm kidding. But it's really very important to notice that. And for me as a teacher, to say right off the top, and it is one of the things I plan to in my clumsy and befuddled way, but plan to say and hope that they get it, that no, there is no room for that in this world. And, you know, we have made horrible mistakes in our past, and most of those mistakes are due to the white race, in my opinion. And I think that Hollywood is trying. I was very turned on by the Emmy Awards last night.
Me too.
I really liked what they did last night. And so let's just try to keep down that path and always know that behind my doors, there'll be no room for that nonsense.
But I was hoping to see even more diversity. I was hoping Latin Americans, from people from different, like, Japanese people and Chinese people. Everybody. Full diversity.
Absolutely.
Every religion.
I mean, you take a look at one of the greatest one of the greatest films of all time, The Seven Samurai, Akira Kurosawa, which became, of course, what the hell did it become? And it was just, and it just starred, oh my God.
It was Yul Brynner, right?
No. It's one,
no, that was a different
Fences.
One.
Come on, Fences. Who starred in Fences? I'm going.
Oh.
Oh, come on. No, we can't
I'm
do this.
I'm blanking
one of the
out.
Best goddamn actors on the face of the earth.
Hmm? I didn't have any sleep, Chris. Give me a break.
You didn't have any sleep. I played New Haven and Hannibal.
I just love that man, and I can't think
of
his name.
On the face of the earth. I was just with my buddy Andy Garcia, and we saw him at a Lakers game.
He has three names. And he's
you
the
know,
voice of
everybody,
the Darth
everybody
Vader.
Right now is screaming.
Yelling at us.
No, not James Earl Jones. No.
Oh,
no,
is that James Earl Jones?
It was.
Because he was on Fences on Broadway.
Okay, we're talking about Akira Kurosawa, who did The Seven Samurai, which became the. It became
not
a famous spaghetti western, and it just.
Yeah,
starred.
I know.
They
I know.
Did a remake with. A very
Denzel Washington.
Denzel Washington, thank you very much.
Because he was in the movie Fences. Is that who you're talking about?
Yes, he starred in the film Fences, written by a brilliant black playwright. So, in any case, the fact is, my whole point, and as in the usual lemon form, that's an extremely important must in my class that we recognize that this was a prejudiced industry. It remains a prejudiced industry. And we must, in every way possible, do our best to break that mold. And I think people are trying hard out there, but it's something that we have not attained yet. And we must continue to strive for. That's a very, very important thing to me. I don't know if I explained it correctly, but...
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Is
yes.
that the one?
There we go.
Okay.
That was the one.
It was driving me crazy.
That came out of Seven Samurai. Yeah. But this is the kind of diversity we must have. We must see, especially in this industry that has such an enormous social impact on the entire world.
Yeah. And diversity in religion and sexuality and everything.
Open
society of that type, that's the best thing that came out from what's going on in the world. And
where did the whole movie industry start? The whole movie industry started with Eastern European immigrants who came to the States and started a thing called vaudeville. And vaudeville broke loose its chains and became literally the movie industry.
And TV.
TV too. Yeah.
Because, in fact, early television was basically vaudeville put on TV because they didn't know what else to do.
So it, really important stuff, folks, I think. And that, again, is going to be part of the Professor Lemon curriculum. So everybody is welcome from all over the country to come stay at my guest house and come to the class.
You're going to have a very busy – I hope Gina is prepared because it's going to be very busy.
So it's a beautiful thing. Yes. You and Sherry will be in the green room together. It'll be a lovely thing.
We don't have a lot of time. We're actually over time, but that's okay.
Oh, I can't imagine why.
I know. We both love talking about this stuff, so it's not that hard.
It's a good thing. Talking is fun.
Yes, it is. Just for me, would you do the laugh for Great Race? You do it so well.
The Professor Fate or Prince of Potsdam?
Either one.
Or both.
Because you do both of them.
I'll keep quiet until the water reaches my upper lip, and then somebody's going to hear about it. Oh, you are a great Leslie, aren't you? There you go.
Thank you. I love it.
My pleasure,
and
sweet.
I love that.
This is
that,
our, what is
I,
this,
that's
our
my
third,
favorite scene,
now?
Too. Yeah, that's our third.
Yeah. It's our third. And I, you're so sweet to keep having me on. I'm such a boring old fart.
No, you're not. You're fun, and I love you, and I really appreciate you coming on, and thank you for taking the time for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're a doll. When I get out west, we're going to say hi, and I'm going to take you out for a bite to eat.
Thank you. That's really sweet.
You betcha.
I really appreciate that.
My pleasure. All right, sweetheart.
Okay.
You have a fabulous
you.
Day. Go ahead and do your sign off there, and thanks everybody for
okay.
listening.
Thank you for listening to Chatting with Sherry.